The National Geospatial Intelligence Agency is joining the Defense Department, Homeland Security, and others in standing up offices in Silicon Valley. NGA Deputy Director Susan Gordon says geographical intelligence, or GEOINT, is changing so fast the agency has no choice.
If you think about the GEOINT revolution that's happening today and how much energy is in the private sector in our business area, we have to be where the technology and the people and the data and the issues are. And if you have to be there, one of the places to be is in Silicon Valley. I can imagine us also being interested in Seattle and Austin and Boston and some of the other tech centers. But the idea is to position us to be present with the innovators as they innovate and have enough of our talent there, whether it's analytic talent or technical talent, so we can discover together the possibilities of the offering and introduce them right into our mission space so that we deliver better geospatial intelligence, whether to the warfighter or to the policymaker.
And before we get into the mechanics of the outpost, you mentioned the GEOINT revolution. Is that a revolution in the sense of GEOINT, geographic information, being used so widely, or are there other technology advances that are causing the revolution, or both?
I think it's both. The revolution has, I'll make up the number, three components. The first is, for about the past 10 years, we have put geospatial information in the hands of not just the warfighter and the policymaker, but the average citizen. You cannot get through life if you're a teenager without having some awareness of location. And from a producer of information, the commercial imagery market is exploding such that not only are there more maps, there's more content. And so that combination of those two spaces has led to a real rise in the technologies that take advantage of them, that can analyze image data, that can put that data into a geospatial framework. And so you just have this energy coming up out of the commercial needs for it. And it's dovetailing with our drive and our history to provide better and better intelligence for our customers.
Describe what will be happening in Silicon Valley. Will you have your own office? Who will be there, and how will it function there?
Our first decision is that we're not just going to hang up a shingle and hope people will come to us. We are going to tuck in behind the activities that are already going on and align ourselves with the universities, with InQtel that's already there, with some of the Amazon innovation that's going there, and position ourselves to be present where those partnerships are already happening. And the people we're going to put out there, we're going to start with three or four and probably build to about a dozen. They will be a combination of technologists, of data scientists, and here's the exciting part to me, analysts, because what the analysts bring is the mission demand that makes some of these technical capabilities sing. And so what we're hoping to do is put that energetic combination from the purpose end, our mission end, out there so we can make faster decisions with our external partners about what will work and what can be introduced.
And what do you expect to be some of the initial outcomes, or how will you measure that this is working according to the way you hope?
For us, NGA has already made a move to change how we are delivering our product to our customers. We have this incredibly fascinating term called GEOINT services. But what that means is we want to expose our content and our data in a way that is useful to our mission users. That means we have a changed architecture that allows us to drop in new capabilities that are going to allow more things to be done with our data. So here's what I expect to happen. We will be faster to identify capabilities that we can use. And because we have an internal engine to take advantage of it, I believe we will be faster in introducing those capabilities to our mission users.
So it sounds as if you're going to be able to gain maybe the marketing and business delivery aspects of Silicon Valley as much as the thinking and technology out there.
I would say yes, And I would take that marketing delivery and turning it into my metric, which is speed. We simply have to be faster at taking advantage of the capabilities that can make a difference to our users.
We're speaking with Sue Gordon, the Deputy Director of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. And what about just some of the mechanics in terms of moving people out there? Will they live there permanently? Will they have sticker shock on homes? And how will all that work from a personnel standpoint?
That's a great question, and it's why you have bureaucrats like me to solve that problem. We will move people out there quickly, and we'll put them on temporary duty. That allows them to get there and allows us to compensate them in the short haul such that they aren't losing ground financially while they're advancing our mission. Over the long haul, we're going to have to find some of the solutions to those questions about how I make it okay for them to live there and not sacrifice personally. There are mechanisms that are aborning. We have a great partner in what's called DIUX that the DOD has just started. That has a presence that we can tuck in behind, and they may provide some hosting opportunities for our officers. We have other partners in the region who have figured out how to compensate their employees in order to allow them to live. And so while my team is out there figuring out the mission advantages and the technology advantages, back here at NGA headquarters, we're going to be spinning very quickly to come up with new mechanisms to allow them to live. But that is probably the biggest challenge of this.
I guess what the world needs is some good stucco trailer parks that look like, you know, the housing out there.
Maybe we've looked at a lot of things. Could we build an apartment building and put all my officers in there? Unfortunately, there are some regulations that govern those things. So we'll have to navigate through it. The good news is, Tom, everyone is working on this challenge. If you were to take any leader in the intelligence community or in the DOD, we all see the same imperative that we really need to get our people where the advances are happening. And so I believe that our model of workforce development is going to change over the near term to be able to allow more flow through of inside and outside government, more movement of our people to different locations. And because we are competing for the exact same people that industry needs, we're going to have to do so in a way that allows them to not lose anything when they work with us.
And just a detail, people in Maryland and D.C. and Virginia may not realize it, but the people in the Missouri know that you have a major facility in St. Louis. Will some of those people be involved in the Westward Ho movement?
So these opportunities will be available to anyone in NGA to apply for these positions, and they will not be static positions. We'll move people in and out of them just as I move people in and out here. What's exciting about what's going on in St. Louis is, and I think you're aware, or I don't know if your listeners are aware, we're about to launch on a major investment in our future by rebuilding our facility there in St. Louis, and one of the ideas behind it is the same that is driving our movement west, and that we need to establish partnerships with the emerging technical community there in St. Louis. And so the same forces that are driving this will be fostered in that area as well.
And when you rebuild that facility, I guess let's bridge to St. Louis for a minute, what will you be doing with infrastructure besides making the building prettier, but what will you be doing with your network infrastructure and trying to upgrade those facilities?
One of the primary reasons for the rebuilding is for security and safety of our people and to give them a modern environment from a cloud-based infrastructure that allow us to do our business wherever it is. But I think the most exciting prospect in St. Louis is the growth in our understanding of how you need to construct a building to allow you to operate in that open environment. So what I expect as we build that facility out is that just as I'm describing a world where we are able to operate in the classified environment and the unclassified environment, I believe that that building will also be designed so that our officers can work inside and outside classified environments, because that's where we must go to prosecute our mission.
Because there's a trend at NGA, as I understand it, that you bring in data palooza people from the outside to work in the environment, and so they have to have access, but you don't want them to have access to, say, the internal secret Wi-Fi network, but yet they need to be in the building, and so you have almost two environments side by side?
Well, that's our hope, because you say it exactly right. Just because we have an imperative to work with the open doesn't absolve us of our responsibility to operate securely. And so I think we are going to be on the forefront of being able to move between those environments. One of the things that we're doing here, I don't know if we've had a chance to talk to you about our Pathfinder activity, which is, for the past year, we've been doing some pretty aggressive experimentation with our officers about really immersing them in an open environment so they can learn about information that is available, technologies that are available. We're on our second revolution on that, and we have actually established here at our Springfield campus a small cutout that allows them to operate in an unclassified environment totally within this building. So view that as rev zero of what I think the kind of things we'll do in St. Louis.
And what is the timeline for St. Louis?
So St. Louis, we expect it to be complete in 2022 or 23. We just made the Corps of Engineers has put out their first report, and we have made an agency preferred alternative of selecting St. Louis. We have about another 6 months of working through finalizing that decision, and then we'll be off and running, and then 2022 and 23 will be up and operating.
So let's talk more about Pathfinder, which is really the open source data revolution that has hit the GeoInt community and also hit the NGA itself.
As an organization, we're in our 20th year as NGA, and we have either tens or hundreds of years experience with our mapping and our imagery side of the house. And we have had an embarrassment of riches in terms of data being collected for our use against our requirements. One of the things that is obvious is there is now so much information being openly produced that can either provide context for that other information, fill in some gaps, or is just straight up useful. But because our history is of using that data produced for us, one of the things we really have to do is to leap in and figure out how we're going to use this plethora of open information. And when I say open information, again, I'm saying commercial satellite imagery, social media, all the way to voluntary geographic information on open street maps, Facebook, Instagram, all the data that is being produced out there that has referenced the time and space that can really help us with our mission. But teaching ourselves how to use it is a cultural challenge in its own right. So what we decided to do is we would do a total immersion program, and we call that Pathfinder. And Pathfinder is taking a set of our analysts and putting them into that environment and giving them challenges to solve completely in the open. And what it has allowed them to do is to explore the richness of the data that's out there, the limitations of the data. It has allowed them to understand the tools that are available to add to the tools that we already have. And it's allowed us to recognize that we have things to contribute to that community, whether through GitHub or in code, that can actually make us a great citizen in this great dream of open geointers.
Well, let me ask this question. Given all of the open source and available and just for sale, may not be open source, but it's publicly available, all the way down to what you can get free on the internet, is there data left for NGA to actually gather, or do you become now someone that doesn't need to gather information or map the world, but simply interpret data that's already extant?
It's a great question, it's a question we ask ourselves, actually, as we constantly look about how we can prosecute our mission and do it effectively and efficiently for the American people. There is still, and I expect there will always be, information that we require that either can't or won't be produced commercially. It's special. It is either so exquisite or so expensive or so unique that it doesn't have the same commercial market. And so I expect that will always be there. An example is people have heard about our contribution to some of the open crises, whether it's the Ebola crisis or the Nepal earthquake or the climate change in the Arctic. And over the past 2 years, what we've figured out is that we have data that is useful to those issues, and we're figuring out how to make it available, not in the closed networks, but on the open World Wide Web. But if you imagine something like the Nepal earthquake, where we're providing our data, Digital Globe is providing their data, OpenStreetMaps are providing their data, your question comes back into play in terms of, well, why did you need us? And what I would say is we're the only one that had the quality information to know that the runway had moved. And if you were trying to fly a plane in there, you require the precision knowledge of the location of the airfield. And that comes with some of the exquisite stuff we have. And then if you imagine going to some of the intelligence questions. So I think it's a balance. But to me, we do have to recognize what is going to become openly available and adjust what we spend our money on to take advantage of that, and then only produce that which only we can produce.
Now, questions of open source data aside, a lot of agencies are using what they loosely call citizen science, in which just average people, sometimes in large numbers, may have sensors, might even be their cell phones, through which they gather information and then transmit it back to the agency because it's fun to be part of something bigger. Any plans for that type of project that could get data into NGA at low cost?
So I think geospatial information in the geospatial space is a really rich area for that kind of possibility of getting contributions to the information we can use. And again, OpenStreetMap is a great example where you have a bunch of citizen geographers wandering around mapping the Earth in places that we sometimes aren't, and that is incredibly useful to us, and then figuring out how we participate with them to add to spaces that they haven't. There are fascinating authoritative and legal challenges with doing that, but I do think that that's a direction we'll move, and it has incredible potential for us. But that issue, actually not different from commercial imagery, is one of the interesting challenges that I think we will have is, you may like open information, but if you get information from the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, what do you expect? You expect it to be right. And so once it passes through our hands, the issue of assuring that data is an interesting challenge for us, or at least having an opinion about the likely accuracy. So as exciting as the prospect of all this open information is, and the number of gaps I can imagine it filling in, it is an interesting challenge in terms of how you pass that on for the users that demand to know the truth of that data according to their terms. And so I think that's a fun technical challenge for my colleagues in industry that are out there looking for a challenge. How you assure masses of open data is an interesting question.
We're speaking with Sue Gordon. She's Deputy Director of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. So in other words, you don't want to spend 1 cent getting a piece of data than $1 million trying to verify it.
And I don't want to spend $1 million getting a piece of data that I could get for 1 cent. There are decisions we'll have to make about how you use that effectively.
Let's talk about the NGA's infrastructure, use of cloud for storage. I know that's something that you're pursuing like so many agencies, and also the need for cybersecurity as networks become more open and more ubiquitous. What are some of the investments you're making to ensure the speeds and that you need and the ubiquity that you need for your own users consistent with cybersecurity?
I'll break those into two, and then you'll understand again why I think that we're one of the more interesting organizations out there. The first is, like any mature organization, we need to move off of the technology stack that dominated 10, 15 years ago to what I consider a modern stack, which is where the data is free and you have cloud services where you can put applications on top of it. It is a much more efficient and effective way in order to both serve data and build applications. And we are aggressively making that move. We are building on the work of the intelligence community as it has modernized its infrastructure, the thing called iSight, and NGA is committed to being in the cloud in 2 years and to be off our own infrastructure and onto shared infrastructure as much as we can be. The question of information security is a great one. You heard me talk about our imperatives to succeed in the open because that's where so many of our customers' issues, data and technology, are. But in order to be there, we must be there securely because we are part of this large network of intelligence and warfighters. And what we're doing does connect to our more classified world. And so I think the imperative for us to advance information security, because we don't have the advantage of what I'll call a moat, where I'm not going to participate in the open. I must participate in the open, and I must protect my data. So I believe that information security advance will come as part of this movement that we are making. So whether it's in our St. Louis facility, or whether it's just where my Pathfinder officers work, or on day-to-day interactions of my analysts, I do believe that this move to open and move to an open infrastructure is also going to be the catalyst for advance in information security.
So it sounds as if maybe the general strategy is less emphasis on network perimeter protection and stopping breakthroughs, if you will, and more on security at the data and application level.
I think that's what we'll have to advance, because just the requirement to move between those areas is going to make you have to protect the data. There will always be network defenses. There will always be perimeter defenses. But you will also have to protect the data itself.
And when you mention a shared infrastructure coincident with the cloud move, what does that mean in terms of like what's inside the building? You still have wiring in there.
We'll have wiring, but we will, to the extent that the intelligence community is going to shared clouds that it uses, we'll participate in that. There will be some things that we serve out of this building, but increasingly we'll serve them off of a shared cloud. And quite frankly, one of the reasons for our move to the Valley is with a mission partner of Amazon for that cloud that allows us to be very close to their innovation as well.
Because the IC, the intelligence community, also has its own cloud, I guess you could look at it that way, in that they have very secure data centers. And do you share with them their facilities now, or could that be a choice for a cloud also?
No, we share with them. So that's our move, off of our infrastructure onto the intelligence community's shared cloud.
And so you'll be there and also with Amazon, which I guess is a commercial cloud. The cloud that they provide to you, is that dedicated to NGA, even though it's Amazon branded?
So we're working with them on their unclassified cloud. And in that sense, we're a client in a protected enclave in order to be able to use it, just as any other client is in a protected enclave.
So classified then would be with the IC as it is now, but it's the unclassified and open that would be in a commercial cloud?
Yes. But all of us are moving to cloud architectures, whether that is protected behind a firewall cloud or whether it's in the open. Moving to a cloud architecture is important.
And I had a question about the legacy of NGA, which was maps, NEMA. Do you still have maps? Are there still people that use mapping tools that end up with paper? I guess you'd call that a pencil.
They do. So we have certainly made a move over the past few years to increasingly digital maps for a couple of reasons. One, it is efficient, a lot less expensive to move bits than it is to move pallets of paper maps around the globe. But also it's effective because you can do much more updating of digital products with much greater periodicity, so the increasing likelihood of its accuracy has just moved up. And so there's been a shift away from paper products, but there are some consumers in disadvantaged locations that are dependent on paper maps, and there are others that have gone all digital and everywhere in between. And so when you have the responsibility of NGA, we don't choose just what we prefer. We choose what they demand. And so we have a whole spectrum of products. And some aviators are using iPads, and some are still using more static products, and we'll move with them as they move and try and show the quality of the product that we can do digitally. And that's just advancing hand over fist.